Well, good morning, everyone. Ordinarily we hear arguments on the 27th floor in a more cozy courtroom, and there's another panel sitting up there today, so that's why we have you here in this courtroom, which I think there are 11 people in this courtroom, which holds about 500. So anyway, we're happy to have you here. We're going to hear six cases this morning, and there'll be a panel change after the first case. When Judge Cudahy will depart and Judge Ann Williams will fill in. So we're ready for the argument in case number 08-2405, Martino versus MCI Communications. And we have Mr. Hollander.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, in this case, the district court clearly erred when it granted summary judgment in favor of the defendant. As this court is well aware, there are a number of ways a plaintiff can establish direct evidence or a circumstantial mosaic of evidence to defeat summary judgment. Mr. Martino did this in several different ways. First, the evidence before the district court was that he proffered evidence of discriminatory comments, which was the cat's paw for the decision to terminate him. In this particular case, Stephen Rumstein was the decision maker. He created a short list, including Mr. Martino. Ultimately, Ed Franklin made the decision to terminate my client. But what is key in this case is Robert Gross, who's my client's supervisor, made repeated comments during my client's employment that he was the old guy, the old timer.
And the reason that could also be like a term of endearment. Judge Dinder often calls me the old timer.
Oh, yeah. And worse.
Okay. Well, in this case, again, Mr. Martino at the time didn't think anything of it. But, you know, ultimately, it wasn't just Mr. Gross that made those remarks. As set forth in the record and in my briefs, after my client was terminated, it wasn't just Mr. Gross that made these remarks. The record shows in this case that my client went to Mr. Higley, who was the manager of another department, and said, hey, you know, I'm about to lose my job, so I really need a job. And the comment made by Mr. Higley was, well, you're a little too senior and too old.
But Mr. Higley didn't have anything to do with laying him off, did he?
No, he did not. But I think clearly that is evidence, circumstantial evidence of discrimination. When you maintain an ageist culture, that should have gone to the jury in this case.
You know, what always bothers me about cases like this, and perhaps it shouldn't, but Gross is the guy who actually hired Mr. Martino, I believe. Is that correct?
The record isn't entirely clear, but that's my understanding.
And he hired him at age 54.
That's correct.
And then 17 months later, he is the cat of the cat's paw who poisons everybody else to get rid of this 56-year-old guy who he hired at age 54. That just seems a little odd. Maybe it shouldn't be, but
as this court knows, I mean, I think counsel made a very big argument in their brief regarding the same actor, but this court generally is not persuaded by a same actor inference. And really, it was Rumstein here that made the decision. Clearly, it was Gross that made the remarks, but again, the same actor inference really doesn't hold sway before the Seventh Circuit. But it's not just the remarks here that we have. We have a lot of other very compelling evidence in this case.
I know we have said that, and it's certainly not a determinative factor at all. In fact, just the opposite. But does that really make a lot of sense?
Well, let me say it this, Your Honor. We had a very similar case before the district court a couple of years ago, Rourke versus Nalco, a case I handled, actually. And in that case, the facts were almost identical to this case. You had a 56-year-old plaintiff who made a recommendation to his supervisor, hey, you know, we should combine some departments, these SBUs. And his boss said, good idea, you're terminated. And the evidence in that case was that Mark Stoll was not the decision maker, but reviewed Mr. O'Rourke in that case 3 months prior to his termination, conferred with the decision maker, Mr. Rowe. Mr. Rowe said, hey, what do you think about terminating Mr. O'Rourke? Stoll says, yeah, that's the right move. That's essentially exactly what we have here. And in that case, in the Rohrer case, you had a favorable performance review 3 months before Mr. Rohrer's termination. Here, you have a favorable performance review 5 months before termination. And the district court in that case said, hey, summary judgment denied, that's a jury question. That should go to the trier of fact. Why is this case any different. And we have an abundance of other
evidence. Was that case a reduction in force case?
That was a reduction in force case because it was a mini RIF. In that case, Roark was RIFed. Just like here, there was more people RIFed. But it's really an analogous situation. But again, in this case, we have a lot more evidence than just the comments. If it was just the comments alone, which I think clearly is enough to get to the jury, but we have a lot more than that. We have, again, we have the comments, but we also have evidence of suspicious timing in this case. Now, while ultimately the defendant claims one of the proffered reasons for his termination that he was an underperformer, you have a situation here, again, the performance appraisal was tendered 5 months before my client's termination. You have Ed Franklin, the ultimate decision maker in this case, who sent Mr. Martino an email basically congratulating on winning one of the awards from the company. And said, you are one of the very best that Verizon has. You're one of the top performers in the company. That's 3 months before my client's discharge. That's by Franklin, who is the decision maker, ultimate decision maker in this case. That alone should get this case to the jury. But the district court didn't find that was compelling enough and grant the defendant summary judgment. Beyond that, we have a situation, they claim it was a RIF, and there's no doubt about it. They let a number of people go. They hired Doug Dill 2 months later, age 38, 18 years my client's junior. It's kind of suspect. Again, that should raise a fact question at a bare minimum. We also have evidence of suspicious behavior in this case. Now, subsequent to my client's termination, the evidence in this case is they retained six younger BSCs. Now, the district court, in my opinion, went out of its way to whittle down that list to zero. They said, this one is 9 years plaintiff's junior. You can't consider that comparator under Tubergen. And I'm asking this court to revisit that bright-line rule. I think it's a good guideline, the 10-year rule, but it shouldn't be a steel bar to prevent a plaintiff from getting into court. But you have a number of other comparators who scored way below on their quota, 26%, 36%. Gentlemen, that were 20 years my client's junior. On their performance appraisals, they were underperformers. They were retained. That evidence alone, that suspicious behavior should send this case to the jury. I mean, coupled
with... there's all this evidence that Martino wasn't really very effective in that big sales of BP, is there?
Well, the evidence in this case, Your Honor, is that he coordinated the first meeting, subsequent meetings, sent 1,200 emails, received 1,200 emails to get this done. They paid him. They compensated him as an overlay salesperson. They gave him awards. So clearly, by the defendant's own criteria, they said he was doing a good job. They didn't have to pay him like that. They didn't have to give him awards if they didn't want to, but they chose to do that. If you have any other questions, I'll save the remaining of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Gray.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Graham, representing the appellees. I think what we saw in the briefs, Your Honor, as well as in counsel's argument, is an attempt to describe the record not as it is, but how they hoped it would be. And what Judge St. Eve did was, in a very thoughtful, comprehensive way, went into these comments. We have a short time here, and I'll try to just touch on a few of them. In addition, the law doesn't support the propositions that appellant raises for you today. But notwithstanding all of that, there are three critical truths that are undisputed that I think are that we should mention. As Your Honors mentioned, after less than 2 years on the job, after being hired at age 54, Mr. Martino was discharged in a nationwide RIF. He was selected by a manager three levels above him, a manager that's undisputed in the record, did not know Mr. Martino's age. He was selected for inclusion on the RIF because of his inadequate job performance and because he lacked the qualifications to perform the business consultant job moving forward as it was.
I find that very hard to believe that you don't know somebody's age when you're going through a RIF. You have a personnel file and they have date of birth as one of the prominent things in a file like that.
Well, the record
I'm not saying it makes a lot of difference, but to say, oh, I didn't have any idea that this guy was 56 years old.
Well, the record was at that level, Your Honor. He didn't know. He had no personal relationship. He did not know how old he was. Remember, this is three levels above, and this is right after the merger. So you've got two large organizations, MCI and Verizon Business, coming together at this point. They went through a redundancy and looked at folks who would be moving forward. But now Mr. Rumstein, who made the recommendation, should be noted, made a recommendation of six folks, the rest far younger than Mr. Martino. And those people were put into Mr. Rumstein's group on the RIF.
How about, was it Fox and Frankie? They were younger, and their sales records were worse, and they were retained.
They were retained, Your Honor. They did not make it onto Mr. Rumstein's list and did not make it up to Mr. Franklin. The record, again, the point raised by counsel, and I think a good one by Your Honor, goes back to the quotas. But the undisputed record, and we heard this throughout discovery from multiple people at the company, was the performance of one of these consultants needs to be beyond the quota. This case started at the very beginning about Mr. Martino's quota. In fact, in the 17 months that he worked for my client, he only made quota 1 month. 1 month in all of those. But because of the nature of the commission...
Why did they give him all these awards? You know, it seems a lot of people hadn't made up their minds what kind of a fellow he was. They gave him all these awards and...
Well, there is no doubt, there's no doubt, Your Honor, that his role on the BP sale, and because he was an overlay consultant, a specialist, not the core people. In fact, when asked in his deposition about whether or not he was an important part, he said, I hope so. I'm not sure. You'll have to ask Mr. Schiffman. Well, Mr. Schiffman testified that he was an important part of the team. But as a result of this very large sale and his role as a business solutions consultant, he did make an extraordinary number above quota for that month, Your Honor. But getting back to you.
You mean everybody that was involved in the sale got a letter of commendation, is it?
The record says that those folks that were involved in sale did very well on a commission basis. But getting back to your question on quotas, the job of business solutions consultant, it's undisputed from everybody that we heard from, and Judge St. Eve took a hard look at this, was that it's more than just meeting this quota. And we heard from Mr. Schiffman, Mr. Rumstein, among many others, that he just wasn't participating in the way that he needed to. In fact, even in the 2005, his one performance review while he worked for us before the merger, it even mentioned that he wasn't doing follow-up. But those two people, the case law tells us, Your Honor, that to be similarly situated, whether it's in the context of indirect evidence for this mosaic that he's trying to piece together or as a result of being similarly situated in the indirect McDonnell Douglas, both Potasic, Tanis, all of our recent cases from this court tells us that the similarly situated element must go to their duties, their responsibilities. And Judge St. Eve looked at the responsibilities of these folks, not just the quota, because this case was more than the quota, and found that they were not similarly situated, at least in terms of the analysis on the direct evidence. They have tried to piece together a bunch of stories about a bunch of people. I just want to talk, I only have a short time left, on this cat's paw issue. This court's spoken at length. I'm not sure how the fabulist LaFontaine would have predicted all this sort of excitement over this long fable. But the cat's paw is important here, and I want to raise it for you, in that the monkey in this situation that's controlling the cat not only is having no communications with the cat, but that monkey would be Mr. Gross, not only denies the comments, but that is the same person that hired. So I don't think they can have it both ways. In other words, that same actor, if the alleged bad actor is Mr. Gross, that is the same person that hired this gentleman less than 18 months earlier. So I don't think cat's paw applies here. And they never made the leap from Mr. Gross to Mr. Rumstein, Mr. Franklin. Another key point that if we look into the record, Your Honors, when they say that there was discussions between Mr. Rumstein and Mr. Gross, the record contains numerous instances where it's actually Mr. Rumstein, who's an important key member of the BP team, as admitted by Mr. Martino in his deposition, that's telling Mr. Gross about his lack of performance. For him to persuade you on cat's paw, he must say that it's Mr. Gross talking to Mr. Rumstein. But when we look through these things and look through the suspicious timing allegations and the mosaic allegations and really get to the record and the law, you'll see that there wasn't Mr. Gross telling Mr. Rumstein. It's actually Mr. Rumstein telling Mr. Gross. And the last point I want to leave you with is there is nothing in the record that shows any discriminatory animus by either Mr. Franklin, the decision maker, or Mr. Rumstein, the person who made the recommendations. I think that's critical. There are numerous cases, and one must not look further than the age cases rendered by this decision in the last 2 years to show that there is not evidence to survive summary judgment. I ask you to do what and sit there in your review and do what Judge St. Eve did. Look beyond the conclusory allegations in the brief into the record and look beyond the conclusory allegations of what the cases say as to what they actually say. And you will find that there is not ample evidence for them to move past summary judgment and indeed ask you to affirm summary judgment on behalf of the Appalee MCI and Verizon Business.
Thank you. Did Gross know there was a RIF in progress or contemplated or whatever?
The record, Your Honor, is that Mr. Gross did not participate in it and did not know Mr. Martino was being submitted to the RIF.
I thought Gross was a candidate himself to be laid off.
Well, the record's a little bit unclear on that, but Mr. Rumstein, Your Honor, he was the one looking at his entire unit and making determinations. There's nothing in the record that says Mr. Gross wasn't a candidate, but Mr. Gross admitted that he did not play any role. And by the way, I shall add, and you won't see this in appellant's brief, that asked in a direct question to Mr. Martino of whether or not he thought that Mr. Gross was telling the truth about his role in the termination, Mr. Martino, and we point this out in the briefs, said he did think Mr. Gross was telling the truth. So when you, despite their attempt to cobble these things together, Your Honor, we need to just look deeper into that, and you'll see that you can't take one element from this test, the McDonnell-Douglas test. I haven't had an opportunity to talk to you about the ample evidence in the record, how they weren't meeting the legitimate job expectations, but there's more than enough in the record to affirm Judge St. Eve's decision. Thank you.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Judge. Just a few points real quick. Regarding counsel's comment whether Mr. Martino thought Mr. Gross was telling the truth, I don't even understand the relevance. It wouldn't be admissible under 401 or 403. It simply has no bearing in this case. The thing that troubles me in this case is that while they say Mr. Martino dropped the ball and didn't have what it takes to go forward. This, in the single plaintiff discrimination case, they tendered 7,000 documents. It wasn't a single email, a single document that they proffered, a single performance review, which was critical of my client's performance. There's nothing in the record.
What about that needs improvement feature on the 2005?
Yeah, out of 9 categories, it was 1 category needs improvement, and Mr. Gross told my client, I got to put something bad down on that. So essentially, it undercuts the 1 negative rating out of 9.
But wasn't that the category that the BP team criticized him about?
Post-sale foul. But Mr. Gross said, I got to put something down. He flippantly said, you know, don't worry about it. It wasn't a big deal. And nothing was ever mentioned to Mr. Martino before or after that by Mr. Gross, Mr. Martino, Mr. Schiffman, nobody, Mr. Franklin.
Did other people involved in that BP deal get similar accolades to the ones that Mr. Martino received?
There were some emails. I think actually there was an email from Ms. Dupre, who was Mr. Schiffman's boss, and I think Mr. Schiffman congratulated the team, which included Mr. Martino. There's no doubt about it. But there were separate sales awards, which my client won, independent of those members of the sales team. Counsel mentions also that Mr. Gross denied the discriminatory remarks. I have yet to litigate a discrimination case in the Northern District of Illinois where I've had a decision maker say, yes, I call that person an old-timer.
Those cases get settled.
That day will come, I guess, but that is yet to come.
I'm still not sure why old-timer shows animus, but we discussed that already. It's sort of a friendly greeting to me.
Well, at the time, Mr. Martino thought it was friendly, but then when he got riffed, he put it together, and especially with the remarks from Mr. Higley and the other evidence, the people who retained. And frankly, if you look at the comparator list of the individuals who retained,
it's simply flabbergasting on who was kept on as far as people who were 20 years as junior and were performing at 35 or 40% of the quota. On behalf of Mr. Martino, I would respectfully request that this panel reverse the district court's decision granting summary judgment to the defendant.
Thank you.
Thank you, both
counsel. Excellent presentations. And we will take the case under advisement. We're going to take a short recess now while we wait for a panel change.